Now, can you hold Q's experience in your mind? Just hold this in your mind for a few minutes. We have a story from Scripture this morning. This is one of the great stories of Scripture. You can imagine an afternoon courtyard at the palace, and the summer breeze is blowing blue and white gauze curtains. They're secured with linen cords and pewter rings to big marble columns. You should think restoration hardware. Right? Scattered around are blue and gold, silver couches on the mother of pearl mosaic floor, and there are chalices. No two chalices are alike. There's wine, lots of wine, and a lot more wine, because there's a king who intends on having a good time. So the wine begins to flow. On this day, the king remembers his beautiful wife and he wants her to come before the men. So he calls for her, "Come so I can show you to all the men in the party." Or, "Come with your crown alone, naked, so I can show you to the men in the party." We'll never know the detail of the story. But maybe the queen fills in the gap because she refuses to attend. She's at a party of her own with all the women on the other side of the palace. And for her defiance, for her choice to refuse, they determine that this queen will be banished from the kingdom. No more will the queen be allowed to sit beside the king in the court. Men are in charge. And the king sends an edict to the whole land to remind all the women of all the households, men are in charge in this story. Oh, this is in the Bible. This is in the Bible. Now, to save the king from his sadness, because he's sad almost immediately that he sent her away, he wondered if he did the right thing. His advisors determined, "We'll find you another queen, only this time we'll choose from the youngest girls in the land, and we'll bring them all to the palace, and we'll put them in front of you, and you can choose. Whichever one from the contest pleases you, king, you can have her." This is the opening scene for the brave, courageous, good, righteous Queen Esther. All of those adjectives are used to describe this girl, really, a Jewish girl named Hadassah who is orphaned. Her uncle Mordecai, her cousin Mordecai, he adopts her and takes her in. When he looks at her and realizes she's so beautiful, really beautiful, he decides to render her to the palace for the same contest. It's a beauty pageant. Hadassah's name is now Esther, and she spends the first 6 months with oil treatments of myrrh, and the next 6 months with cosmetic and makeup treating her body. All the girls in the castle, they're doing the same thing, preparing to present themselves before the king. From the moment Hadassah, now Esther, arrives, she's a favorite. They give her the best room and the best food and the best servants. And in fact, as this contest goes, Mordecai tells her, "Don't let anybody know about your heritage, your faith, your race. Keep it a secret. Don't let them know you're Jewish. Things will go better for you here if they don't know." So Esther keeps it a secret. The king loved Esther more than all the other women. She had won his love, and more than all the others, Esther now becomes the queen. He moves her into the house, and now is the beginning of their happily ever after. Now, their happily ever after is usually, in Christian storytelling, it's usually demonstrated this way. We're going to a video. Yep.
Good Queen Esther, by tradition, won a beauty competition, and her nation won salvation through her prayers and her petition.
Photoshop. Couture stylists. Publicist. This is the beginning of their happily ever after now. The king moves her into the palace. Esther has this cousin, Mordecai, and we learn now from the beginning of the story that Mordecai causes problems because he refuses to bow down to the prime minister, the first in command, right after the king. He refuses to pay homage. So Haman, the first in command, that prime minister, he said to King Ahasuerus, "A certain group of people exist in pockets among other peoples in all the provinces of your kingdom. Their laws are different from those of everyone else, and they refuse to obey the king's laws. There's no good reason for the king to put up with them any longer. If the king wishes, let a written order be sent out to destroy them. And I," Haman says, "I'll pay for it myself. You won't cost you anything, King Ahasuerus." So the king is persuaded to wipe out and kill and destroy all the Jews, both young and old, even women and little children. Wipe them out, seize their property, and all of them on one day. This becomes an order, a royal decree that goes out across the kingdom. At the same time, in every province, in every place, this king's order and this new law arrived. And a very great sadness came over the Jews. They gave up eating and they spent whole days weeping and crying in loud pain. Many Jews lay on the ground in mourning clothes and ashes. Yeah, I get it. The plan is that on this one day, not only in the capital city, the current modern day city of Shusha, Iran, by the way, not only there, but from Ethiopia to India, all across the 127 provinces, on this one day, the Jews would lose their life. So for this news, the Jews put on their funeral clothes and their weeping and wailing. Now inside the palace, Esther, she and her cousin Mordecai, he's on the outside, she's on the inside, they begin passing notes. Mordecai tells her for the first time, "Your people, our people, they're about to be killed. We need help. Don't think you'll stay alive just because you live and work and sleep with the king. Who knows, little girl, but that you've come to this place for such a time as this?" You might have never heard the Esther story, but most all of us have heard this phrase, "for such a time as this." Have you heard that? "For such a time as this, bottom of the ninth, bases are loaded, for such a time as this, pick up a bat, sitting at Farrell's, here comes the ice cream, somebody's got to do it, for such a time as this." For such a time as this, Esther, you're in the palace. For such a time as this. So Esther agrees to go before the king. She agrees to spare her people. He doesn't even know these are her people yet. Remember, she hasn't told him that she's Jewish. She's kept this a secret. But she does now what any woman would do next. If you need to scheme something, what do you do now? Of course you bake. So she bakes cookies and breads and roasts meat and potatoes, and she begins the first of several feasts. The plan is that the king and Mordecai will sit at the feast together, and Esther will soften them. Now, in the background, there's this Prime Minister Haman, and he's not given up his hatred for Esther's cousin Mordecai. Haman is so angry at him, and his friends and family help him birth an idea. You know, if you really hate Mordecai, you just have to build a tall, about 75 feet, go up in the air, put a tall, pointed pole high up on the top. On the top of that pole, you can just impale Mordecai and just let his body hang there. You don't think the Game of Thrones people do this on their own, right? They read the Bible. Just hang his body dangling. So Haman, you can go to the king and you can feast and be happy now. It's all gonna be okay. Haman liked the idea and he prepared the pole. Yay. What Haman didn't know, the king has another plan fascinating. They've got simultaneous plans. The king, in fact, is taking a liking to Mordecai because he's learned that Mordecai spared his life months before anonymously. So the king is trying to imagine what he can do to honor Mordecai, while Haman is trying to imagine how to get Mordecai's body up on top of the pole. Simultaneous plans. And now we're to the portion of the story that Deanna read earlier, when Esther stands in front of the king and begs that he spare her and all of the Jews in the land. Now remember, this is the first time the king is hearing that his wife is Jewish. This is the first time he's heard Mordecai actually got him to sign a death decree for all of the Jews. The king's furious. He begins to pace. He goes outside. He comes back in. And people say to the king, you know, there's that 75-foot tall post. You could just put Haman on it. The king decides, this is a good idea. So they impaled Haman on the very pole that he had set up for Mordecai. And the king's anger went away. Isn't that a great story? Who feels good in this story now? Who feels good after any of these scenes in this story? Who can sit down and say, wow, I accomplished my life script. I went to college, got a nice girl, found meaningful work, and impaled Haman. Who feels content about the direction of their life? Who can lay and sleep at night without being interrupted or feeling afraid? Who could go in the afternoon and sit with family and friends and enjoy food and laughter in 103-degree weather? Who could do that in this story? Who feels good at the end of this story? Now remember Q up here earlier. Q with the voices in his head. Q who reminded us that everyone is breaking, that everyone hears voices, that no one is superhuman. And if we claim to be, it's just because we think the truth is less of a problem. Everyone is breaking in this story. Everyone is breaking in our world. I'm calling this good guilt, bad guilt, bad guilt, good guilt for these first 2 weeks of school. That is through the story of Queen Esther and Mordecai and the king and all of the citizens scattered in 127 provinces. All they've done is be in the wrong place at the wrong time. How many of these scenes produce guilt? Guilt is that feeling that of responsibility for something that's gone wrong and a weight that we can't seem to shake. Guilt often comes from these voices in our heads, a particular problem often that we didn't cause and we can't cure, but we walk around with the heaviness of this. In this story with Esther, the way it's typically presented in Christian storytelling, it's a hazard. I want to repeat, it's a hazard when we summarize the story of Good Queen Esther. We often do it in the little video clips that you saw, or this way, in the children's storybooks. The problem with this is that we never graduate. This is the story of Esther we always remember. In fact, those of you who in your adult Sabbath school lessons last month studied the story of Esther, the content there isn't hardly different than the storybook aimed at third graders. This is Queen Esther. Oh, how lovely it will be, how exciting we get to be in a pageant together, as according to the story for the children. Esther, who's been orphaned and now she's a queen, and it's a glamorous princess bride life. Oh, there'll be difficult decisions, but you know, she'll just breathe deep and do some yoga. And it'll all come out in the end for Queen Esther. And in the end, really, it's not so bad. In the end, look, everyone will just get on with life. Can I read you the ending to the children's story? And so it came about that the king made a new law and God's people were saved, God's people being the Jews. Messengers, some on mules, some on camels, others on horses, still others on foot. They raced through the land, spreading the glad news. God's people shouted for joy. Perhaps the happiest of all was Queen Esther, once Hadassah, the orphan girl, then Esther, the shining star, and now Esther, the brave queen. The problem with this version of the story is that it's not the whole truth. It's not the full biblical truth, because before the story is over, Esther and Mordecai will develop their own plan, and 75,000 people will be dead at their hands. Next week, we'll talk about that. The problem with this version of the story is that it's not true and it's not biblical, and that when we don't tell the truth, the brokenness in our lives, it can't be attended to, friends. More damage and more pain comes when we keep our stories hidden, when we fail to make time for people to share their stories. My father, someone told him when he was in college, his goal was to go to dental school. Someone told him, "You'll never be smart enough to get accepted." While he was sitting in classes at Loma Linda University, people told him, "You'll never be smart enough to advance." And when he graduated and built his first practice in the Northwest, still he could hear the voices in his head, "You're really not good enough to do this. You don't deserve to have this life. You're just a pretender." When we don't make room to hear our stories, those tapes continue and they produce what I'm calling bad guilt. It's a guilt that doesn't belong with us, because we're all juggling. Here's the truth. We're all juggling. We're all negotiating. We're all managing our way through life, every one of us. Look left and look right and look at how beautiful we all look here today. Go ahead, look left and look right and see how gorgeous everyone is. We are all juggling and negotiating and managing our way through life, including this preaching pastor. Every one of us with a story. So we have to tell and make room for our stories. We have to listen. In the Esther story today, we could identify her truthfully as a sex slave. And the men in the palace who have the harem and who've kept the girls as their traffickers. If we tell the truth about the story today, we can see that gender and class and race and politics and religion and bigotry and hate, it goes on and on. Racism, genocide, and conquest. The physical, the psychological scars of this story, they go deep. Everyone's just struggling to maintain, to get on with life. And in this particular story, not unlike what we hear in our world today, there's a refugee community and they're attempting to just hang on to their own cultural memory. They just want to be their own people. Some of you, for a lot of years now, you understand this. You understand a bigger power coming to your home or your village or your nation. You understand what it is to pick up and go. You get the psychological scars of an imperial power. Many of you can tell this story. Many of us can't. And so we need to listen. Bad guilt, that heaviness, that feeling that we carry with us, that we're doing something wrong or we're not measuring up or we've disappointed someone, it's often a feeling we generate and it's often something assigned to us, like the voices in my father's head. But I want to tell you, that's a challenge when we listen to our own voices and the voices of other people. We're at the mercy of our own ideas. But I want you to know this morning, we are all much safer with the mercy of God's ideas. The mercy of God's ideas, it's where we all belong this morning. If you thought the bad voices in your head were because you're not satisfying God, it's the biggest, brightest truth I can tell you today. You'll never have a better cheerleader than the Almighty. And as we begin the school year, students, there's over 3,000 of us from the academy up to the university. We began this in 1922 with about 88 students. Can you believe that? We had students numbering about 80. Today we number about 3,000. The biggest truth I can tell you today is your number one cheerleader is the creator of the universe. You can never be bad enough for God to walk away. Could never be good enough for God to hold you any closer. The psalmist reminded us. The psalmist said, Psalm 124, look, if the Lord hadn't been for us, our help, it's in the name of the Lord, the maker of the heaven and the earth. Yes, a mighty fortress, that's our God. Our help is in the Lord. And in the Esther story, God is so far in the background. It's the story that almost didn't make it in the Bible. One of a couple of writings that doesn't mention God, it doesn't mention worship, it doesn't mention acts of piety, doesn't mention anything about a religious life. They wondered, should we include this story? God is so far in the background of Esther's narrative, but it would also be sloppy for me today to just simply summarize and say, well, make God the first in your story, and then it's all better. Because those tapes we deal with don't go away so quickly. Today, many of us today need to start telling the truth about our lives. This is what friends are for. This is what church is for. Oh yes, this is what church is for. This is what the counseling center is for the university. This is what the counselors are for downtown Riverside and spread all out. If you need to talk to someone today, let one of the pastors know. It begins in just small steps like this. Let me tell you about the voices in my head. And little by little, we tell the truth and we listen to each other's stories and we pull God front and center in our story. And I can tell you, eventually, the things of this earth grow dim. Bless the Lord, the maker of the heavens and the earth, our best cheerleader, you, me, the neighbors, all of us. Oh, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter the race or the creed or the religion. It doesn't matter that this week the Pope in our nation, and there's a few little voices in Adventism that the Pope sneezes and we sort of get an apocryphal twerk. Twitter, like the world is coming to an end. Because the Pope is telling us to feed the hungry and take care of the earth. Because he came to our country from a historic visit to Congress and said, you all should be honest leaders. I don't understand this, but I know we're challenged that God could cheerlead all of us. I'm looking for an Advent Christianity that's got a bigger imagination. That good news for me doesn't mean bad news for the Catholics. And if you're sitting here today, Catholic family and friends, and we've wounded you in our Advent community this week, I am sorry. There is a big God who loves us all. In our gospel reading, Mark 9, Jesus says, what's it to you if someone else wants to offer a drink of water in my name? Get over it. Did you hear that? I'm reminded this morning as we close of that story I've told so long ago, but it just kept settling in my mind this week. Do you remember this one about Sheila Walsh with her boy? They picked up a dead bird that had flown into the window at their house, and not dead, dying. Arm flapping off the side of his body. They scooped him up off of the ground. Her son insisted that they drive the 45 minutes to a bird shelter for a little tiny know-nothing sparrow with a little arm flapping. She couldn't believe she had to stop her day and do this. They drove to the bird shelter. When they got there, in the bird shelter, they looked around and they could see one of everything. There's a duck with its leg missing. There's a goose with its beak half falling off its face. Over here is a golden eagle that's blind in one eye. And to the mix, they add their little sparrow with its broken flapping wing. They look around the room and mom says to the caretakers there, I'm just amazed that all these species can live here together. They don't eat each other, kill each other. Caretakers in the refugee center said, oh, it works quite well, actually, because they all know they're wounded. We all have tapes in our head. We all manage loads that aren't ours. Thanks be to God, the maker of heaven and earth, the mighty fortress, the brightest cheerleader we all have. Amen.